newspaper article. You ready? It's a little bit weird. It says, Pastor Steve took the stage under a single spotlight, and after some coy banter, he reportedly announced that it was Baptism Sunday, and everybody started cheering. And he said, but this was not going to be your mama's Baptism Sunday. All right. Are the slides up? Okay. I don't know if you can see this. This is the stage. All right. At this cue, a giant water slide stretching from the balcony down to a small pool of water was unveiled from behind a large curtain. Those people being baptized were sent hurling towards the waters of baptism in identification with the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. The event had been dubbed by leadership Splashtism Sunday. The water slide is fun, said one of the pastors, but the whole reason we did this is to get the most number of people baptized in the quickest time possible. As of Tuesday, the church's website reports that the church has broken its own record for the most baptisms in a single Sunday. Now, here's the question. Be honest with me. How many of you are uncomfortable with this? I'm so glad that you're uncomfortable with this. Now, I will tell you, this is a real article, but it is not a real story. I don't know if you've ever heard of Babylon Bee, but there is a blog, a Christian satire blog out there that he, about once or twice a week, I say he, that is so not PC because we don't know. The person in charge of the Babylon Bee likes to, about twice a week, a different article that is fake, but that kind of exposes some of the weird things in the church, you know, and tries to expose some of the things like this. Now, let me ask you something. Why does this picture bother you? Why does it bother you? And I would love to hear. It's a gimmick. Are gimmicks bad all the time? Well, when it's baptism, it feels like it. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. For most of us, the line that this fake article crosses just feels so wrong because it makes what is holy trite and cheap, and we instinctively feel that. But most of the time in church world, the line between what is holy and what attracts people in a consumeristic culture is not as easy to define. I mean, it's like sometimes you don't know, is this okay, is this not? Because it like rides the line. We want to attract people. We want people to feel comfortable in our culture in that way, but we still have this gospel message that is not very comfortable all the time. A lot of churches struggle with being kingdom-minded, yet still trying to appease people's preferences, you know? It often happens is that pastors get so caught up in trying to be creative and trying to grow the church and trying to build buildings and trying to have all these things that help the church grow that often what happens is they're so busy they neglect their own souls. And they prepare good sermons, yet they don't have much time for prayer and for really studying the scriptures and for doing the habits that make their soul healthy. Pastors are burning out at an alarming rate. One of the guys that I follow all the time on Facebook and Twitter and his blogs and stuff recently resigned after like 14 years in a church he started. It breaks my heart. So while creativity and good sermons, they attract people to the church, and that's a good thing. We want people to come and be a part of our family. They often leave after a while because creativity and fun services and all that, it's just not enough. And so should we not worry about being creative? Of course not. God is beauty. God is creative, and that is a good thing. But the problem is not creativity and services and the quality of this product and good sermons and fun kids ministries and all those things are awesome. But the problem is a heart issue, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Because all of us, this is something that we all struggle with, especially in an American culture that's so consumeristic. And pastors, they can easily rely on the product that we have called church services, thinking that this is what's going to grow the church. If I just have a great sermon, if I just have this amazing program for kids and youth ministry, and if we do all of these things right, we'll finally grow. And frankly, is that how the church grows? No, God grows the church. All we do is water and plant. But I don't want to just get on to pastors, because let's be honest. Often, we're the ones of us, and I can say this as me because I'm just a normal church member now, but those of us who attend most frequently, we want the church to be the way we like it. I mean, we want to have the music that we like. We want to have a certain length of services, which is usually defined as shorter. And we want to have lots of programs, especially for the kids. And I'm telling you, I'm there. I was thinking about this sermon this week going, oh my goodness, the reason we chose the church that we are a member at, the primary reason was because my daughter, my teenage daughter, was involved. And we were like, thank you, God, that she likes to be in a youth group. I don't care where it is. We're going there. We're all like this sometimes. Well, maybe you're not, but we are like this sometimes. Unfortunately, a lot of people, you know, churches provide a lot of good things, and they do. But unfortunately, most of us, if we admit it, we're still left a little empty and unsatisfied. Why is that? One more picture before we get into the scriptures. There is a picture. It's a famous picture by Van Gogh called Starry Night. And here it is. You might have seen it before. This picture was painted almost 130 years ago. Now, Van Gogh was an artist who was struggling with mental illness, even cutting off his ear one time during a seizure. Now, Van Gogh, he was deeply spiritual, and there is a purpose behind this, I promise. He was deeply spiritual, but his life oscillated between rejecting Christianity and a devotion to it. At one point, his devotion was so strong that he became a missionary in his community to orphans and widows and the common people. But later, seeing how corrupt the church was and how the church was taking advantage of those exact people, he concluded that God was dead. In his final years, as his mental illness became more severe, Van Gogh entered into another period of profound devotion to God, yet a disillusionment with the church. You ever feel that way? Devotion to God, but disillusionment with his people. How many of us feel that way? Well, this picture, it was painted during that time in his life. Now, there's a couple of things about this that I find astounding, because deep blue for Van Gogh was used to represent God's infinite presence, and it pervaded everything. And you can see just deep blue everywhere. But yellow, that represented God's love, and that was his favorite color. And if you can see, you have the stars in the sky. God's loving presence was in the heavens, yet it was no less real on the earth. Now, I know it's a little bright in here, so it's hard to see, but there are a lot of homes at the bottom, and each one of the homes has yellow in it, where you can see God's love purveying out of the homes of these different people. But there is one building in this imaginary village that has no light, no divine presence. Do you see what it is? The church. For Van Gogh, he saw God's love and God's presence in everything, purveying out of homes, purveying in nature, but it was missing in the church. In Van Gogh's judgment, institutional Christianity was cold and lifeless. It even sounds cold and lifeless, doesn't it? Institutional Christianity. Woo, let's all be a part of that. But for Van Gogh, it was selfish consumers who robbed those in need of God's presence. Because Van Gogh found himself drawn to prostitutes and peasants. That's who he felt. And so, sounds like somebody else I know. Van Gogh was inspired by nature and stillness. So what happens when the church becomes about the consumer, about our preferences, our wants and our desires? It becomes just like this. It becomes lifeless and powerless and misses the whole purpose for what we were created. All right. Let's enter into the scriptures, because there is a great illustration in the Old Testament about this that I wanted to talk to you. So we're going to be in Exodus 19, and I'm going to read a couple of different verses. But before I do, and as you open up there, I wanted to paint it kind of a picture of what's happened so far. Because when we enter this passage, it had been 400 years since Abraham had received the promise of land from God. 400 years has passed. Now, after centuries of slavery, that promise of Abraham was a distant memory to the Hebrew people. The Israelites had their God, of course, but after so many generations of being oppressed by the Egyptians, it was the Egyptians' gods that had proven most powerful. And they just, they had no recollection. They hardly remembered at all Abraham's God. But then Moses comes and he claims to be sent from their God, that same God of Father Abraham. And so God's power was shown through miracles and plagues and eventually the Hebrews being released from Egypt. And not only that, the Egyptians, just as God had promised, gave the Hebrews livestock and gold and jewelry as they left. And then, you know, they get into the wilderness and the Pharaoh changes his mind and starts chasing after them. And they come to the Red Sea and they've got the Egyptian army behind them and the water before them. And the Red Sea parts and they walk through the Red Sea on dry land. They've seen all of this spectacle. And finally, they get to this mountain, Sinai, the God's holy mountain. And that's where we begin. It says in verse 3, Moses went up to God and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, I wish I had a God voice, but I don't. So you have to pretend, okay? If you want, during God's parts, you could crank up the bass. No, I'm just kidding. So this is, God said, this is what you are to say to the house of Jacob and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. I mean, he's saying, I am the God who brought you out of Egypt. It was me who parted the Red Sea. In verse 5, now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations, you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. There are words. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites. So Moses, this is what I want you to tell them, that if they follow and obey me alone, these former slaves, they wouldn't just become people of God. They would be priests to bring God to the world. I mean, they are being given a holy purpose, and they respond so well. It says in verse 7, so Moses went back and summoned the elders of the people and set before them all the words that the Lord had commanded him to speak. And the people all responded together. I mean, this is so beautiful. We will do everything the Lord has said. And so Moses brought their answer back to the Lord. I mean, they're saying, we've seen God's power. We recognize that he has chosen us. We're in. We're going to do everything he says to do. And then in verse 9, the Lord says to Moses, I'm going to come to you in a dense cloud so that the people will hear me speaking with you, and they will always put their trust in you. So, Moses, get the people ready. In verse 16, have you been clicking? Because I just realized I haven't been clicking, so thank you. Thank you. You're doing great. On the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning, and with a thick cloud over the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast, everybody in the camp trembled. I mean, you think sensory overload, clouds and lightning, thunder and trumpets. I mean, it's just, this is a spectacle. Then Moses led the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the foot of the mountain, and Mount Sinai was covered with smoke, because the Lord descended on it in fire. And the smoke, I mean, you could just imagine this mountain that looks like a volcano. The smoke billowed up from it like smoke from a furnace, and the whole mountain trembled violently. As the sound of the trumpets grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and the voice of God answered him. I mean, Moses speaks, and God answers him. Could you imagine this day? This would be an event that they were going to pass on to their children. This was maybe the event that would define their lives. They could never be the same again because of this moment. And so what does Moses do? He goes back up on the mountain. And for about the next 10 chapters, which we're going to read. No, I'm just kidding, we're not. For the next 10 chapters, God begins to tell Moses the laws of this new society. And the people, they stay at the bottom. And what do? They wait. And God tells Moses the first of the laws, that the people shall have no other gods before me. And what are the people doing? They're waiting. And they're waiting. And they're waiting. And like weeks pass by. And Moses is up. I just yawned, and I saw a bunch of you yawn, too. That was really kind of funny. So Moses is up on the mountain, and the people are at the bottom, and they don't know what's going on. And there's no phones to text, and there's no way of knowing, and they're just sitting there. But nobody's touching the mountain because they've been told anybody who touches the mountain's going to die, and they're, like, freaking out a little bit about that. So everybody's just waiting. Till finally, when the people, and this is chapter 32, many chapters later, when the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron, Moses' brother, and said, "Come, make us some gods who will go before us. As for Moses, who brought us up out of Egypt, who knows what's happened to that guy? Moses is gone. We need a new leader." And so the people ask for a god, just like they had in Egypt, to protect them and guide them. It's their default. But you ask, what about the Red Sea? I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, you were walking on dry ground, water on both sides. You saw smoke and fire and, you know, you trembled. You were scared. I thought that was the life-changing event. I thought everything was going to be different now. How could you revert so easily back to your old god, the other gods? How could you forget so fast? Who does that? Who does that? Everyone. We all do. You know, when I was 21 years old, my wife of a year and a half suddenly passed away from a blood clot. And maybe another time I'll share that story and about the journey that happened as a result of that and how my faith was affected at first negatively, very much so. But for over a year, I remember going to the cemetery where she was buried, and there was a beautiful oak tree right by her grave, and I would just sit there, and I would reflect, I would think, I would mourn, I would grieve. But the cemetery was right on a huge highway right in our town. And so as I was sitting under that tree, I was looking at the highway, probably 200 yards away. Cars just, you know, a million cars driving 100 miles an hour. Everybody going to their own thing fast in a rush and all that. And I remember saying to myself out loud all the time, God, I don't want to ever be like that again. Those cars going, you know, 100, just so chaotic. God, don't let me hurry through life and miss the things that are most important. You know, relationships and the journey and all the things that make life special. My wife's death had changed me forever. That experience taught me to slow down and appreciate relationships, mostly. I'd never be the same. A few years go by, Raylene and I meet each other. We fall in love. We get married. We go to seminary. After seminary, became a youth pastor, and a couple years later, we feel called by God to join another pastor and his wife and start a church in our city. And we do that. And it was a growing church. And things were going amazing. Growing faster than we ever could have imagined. We got really busy. Really exciting. I remember one morning I was driving to work. And I was behind this ridiculous moron who was going 10 miles an hour under the speed limit. I was so stinking frustrated. And I couldn't get around him. And I was trying. And I was kind of probably tailgating him a little bit too close. Just not, I wasn't being a very compassionate driver. Finally, I was able to pass the dude, and no kidding, right when I passed him, I got back into my lane. I realized I was right next to the cemetery where my wife was buried, and it hit me. All of those times I prayed, God, I don't want to become like those people. All of a sudden, I am one of those people. How could I forget so easily? I mean, I thought, can you have a more life-defining, life-changing moment than the death of a spouse or a child? How could I forget that experience so quickly? I thought I was never going to be the same. Why didn't that lesson stick? The Israelites, they walked on dry ground. They saw walls of water in their right and their left. That lesson didn't stick. They saw God speak on a mountain, and that lesson didn't stick. Why do we always revert back to our default? Why doesn't the transformation last? Millions of people, they flock to churches every Sunday, hoping to have an experience with God. Now, I would venture to say few of us have had the same experience on the level of the Israelites seeing the parting of the Red Sea, right? Few of us have had that kind of intense experience. It didn't last for them, yet that's why so many of us go to church. We want to have an experience with God. And you hear all the time, you know, why do you go in church on Sunday? It builds me up for the week, you know, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. And it's not that that's bad, it's just, why doesn't it last? So often, you know, we do leave church and we could be pumped up and our faith strengthened for a while, but then it loses its allure. You know, as a pastor, I've had dozens of families tell me how much our church has changed their life and their family's life, only to see them 6 months later leave to go to another church because they were disillusioned or got burnt or hurt or something, and disappointed about something. And why does it seem that the transformation is so temporary? Where we fall into the same sins that we've always struggled with, or our marriages continue to be unhealthy. Life just seems to be so unfulfilling. Why? And I think it's because we've been deceived into thinking that if we just find the right person to marry, or discover the right house that finally meets our needs, or land just the right job, or join a church that helps me to experience God just right, that's when we'll finally have satisfaction. That's when we'll finally be changed permanently. And sometimes we do change. We do, for a little while. But the problem with experiences, as Moses and the Israelites and me discovered, is that transformation that comes from experiences, it doesn't last. It can't last. It's not supposed to. Experiences aren't bad. They're good. They just make bad goals to strive for. Outward experiences, they don't lead to lasting transformation. That kind of transformation of the heart, comes from one source only, God, and knowing him intimately. See, the purpose of the church isn't about experiences. We do that, and that's good. I want people who would come to my church to leave saying, I felt like I was in the presence of God. I had an experience with God. That is awesome, never a bad thing. Just not the goal of why we come and be a part of this family. The purpose of the church is real, long-term, often slow growth that happens as a result of knowing God intimately through the power of his resurrection. It's learning to love God and love people. See, that's how we experience permanent transformation, where addictions truly are broken and marriages truly are restored. That's where hearts are permanently changed and become other-centered, where people's lives all of a sudden stop focusing on themselves and they truly choose to follow Jesus, regardless of what that means for their comfort or their pocketbook or whatever. See, that's what we were designed for. This is God's kingdom come on earth. His will be done on earth as it is in heaven. But when the main goal of a church is to meet our needs and our wants and to make and experiences, it will always be empty. If worship simply means coming here on a weekend, it's going to become empty and unsatisfying. You know, when that happens, it's kind of like, I like to call it McChurch, like fast food church, where we come to church, we get our quick junk food fix, and then after a while, we realize we want to find a different restaurant, a different church, and we decide to go somewhere else. You know, we've done this, okay? We've all done this, where you're part of a church, that's not meeting my needs or not filling my cup or whatever you want to say, and you go to another church, and it's perfect for a while till you start getting to know people, and they get to know you, and then you see all the problems again, and you're like, why can't there be a good church? So you go to another church, and it's awesome for a while, and this, man, the worship team is great. But after a couple of months, you're like, do they still sing the same songs over and over? And then, oh, the pastor. I mean, I've heard that illustration 6 times, which is why I love coming here, because, you know, you only hear my illustrations once. So you have all this stuff, and then it becomes unsatisfying. Let me ask you something. Is that where you are? It's funny. As I was writing this, it was stepping all over my toes, and it was really powerful for me. now I'm standing here preaching this going, well, this is a little bit stepping on people's toes more than I expected. I thought it was all about me. Isn't that the title of the sermon? I guess it's about us. Is this where you are? I mean, have you been really hoping to find the perfect church? Because if you ever do and you join it, it will no longer be perfect. Because none of us are perfect. I know that if I ever found the perfect church and I became a part of that church, they would be really messed up. See, over the years, as a pastor, we always had, like you do, these connection cards. And I have received so many that people have given why they left the church. I wanted to share a couple with you. No kidding, I promise you, these are real connection cards that I have received. One of them, it really bugs me that you read God's word from a screen and not the Bible. Now, I had to think about that one for a while because I was like, is that okay? Is that okay to put it on the screen? And then it dawned on me, do you realize that the Bible was never written in a book? They didn't have books until like what, the 1400s? That would be like me saying to you, it really bugs me that you read God's word from a book rather than a Hebrew scroll. It just sounds ridiculous. But that's, I mean, it's the same thing. Nobody had a book until books were invented. That wasn't during the Bible writing time. So I heard this one. We sing too many hymns. No kidding, in the same month I got this one. We don't sing enough hymns. I got this one. I'm disgusted that you played a secular song during worship. And I remember thinking, even though that secular song had a stronger biblical message than almost any worship song that we sang that morning, people left the church over it. There's too much reflection. Needs to be more exciting. I've also had, there's not enough reflection. It's too upbeat. I don't like the way you make me feel guilty for not serving. I remember that one because we did it. We had this whole thing about how our children's ministry, we really needed more workers. And if you were a parent, we said, if you're a parent and you're not serving, we need you in the children's ministry. If you could serve once every 6 weeks, it would be life-changing for our church because we were growing so much that week. I don't like the way you make me feel guilty for serving in the church. And I was like, but you have like 7 kids. Anyway. I heard this one. I'll probably come back when you get a choir. We were like, we'll never see you. I need to be in a place that honors God. Flip-flops on stage don't honor God. And I was like, well, neither does a judgmental spirit. But I didn't say that. And then one of my favorites was, I don't like the new name of the church. And I was like, oh, my goodness. How about Jesus' people? That's what we are, right? Who cares what the name on the sign is? Anyway. This stuff makes me want to scream. It does. Because the church isn't about me, and it's not about you. It's not about preferences. Do you realize that the church is the only institution in the history of the world that I am aware of that exists for those who are not currently a part of it? We're the only one. You know, every club, every, you know, association, every institution, it's kind of like, we're here for this purpose. You know, so if you want to be a part, you have to join us and be a part of this purpose. But the church, we're like, our purpose is not for us. It's for those on the outside to help them find life and restoration and wholeness. And when you come in, what do? We love God, we love each other, and we keep trying to go and say to the world, we want to offer you ourselves broken before you. I mean, who does that? We do. It's beautiful. I hope that we have powerful experiences when we worship. It's just that's not why we worship. Experiences are byproducts of loving God and blessing God and loving each other and blessing each other. You know, the church that we started, people are so often surprised, they were back then especially, to hear that I never liked the music of our church. I never did. It was not my thing. It was not my style of music. But it was never about me. And we wanted to start a church that reached a lot of unchurched people in our community. So we picked a style that we thought they would connect with, and we picked a style that our worship leader played to his strengths. That's why we chose it. It was never about me, and I actually never loved the music at all. It's not about preferences, because this is a family that loves God together, a family that loves each other and loves the world and sacrifices. See, this right here, this is the people who we grow closer to God with. This is the people we serve God with. This is a family. In the Lord's Prayer, Jesus taught us how to pray. He said, you know, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. You know how that prayer gets answered? Us working together. Us being the church. That's how his will is made on earth as it already is in heaven. There was a church in Florida reaching a ton of young people. Some of the senior citizens in the church weren't exactly excited because the music volume kept getting louder and louder and louder as the people in the church got younger and younger and younger. There was this one guy who was just thankful that there were a lot of young people being reached. So instead of leaving, like a lot of people did, he purchased at Costco this jug of earplugs, about this big. And he stood in the back of the, and he made them available to people as they walked in. If you want earplugs, here you go. I mean, who has ever heard of the earplug ministry? I have never heard of that. But that's what had happened. That's what family does. He didn't, you know, this is my family, and we're accomplishing our purpose. A lot of people who do not know Jesus are coming to know Jesus here. So rather than take off because I don't like it, I'm going to do something about it. Earplug ministry. Church is not a weekly service. It's not a building. It's not a youth group. It's not a ministry. It's not a place that we attend on the weekend. That's not what church is. Church is a family that we get to belong to, a family that we can go out to lunch with, a family that we can share life with and meet needs together. You know, church is the kind of place where people pool their money to help somebody who just lost their job. I mean, that's what family is. It's not about a service. The family exists to love God and love each other. Let's look over here. To love God, to love each other, and to bless the world. I did not do that on purpose. I was sitting here and I was like, oh my gosh, I think that's behind me. So I promise you, Craig did not pay me to say that. Although if you want to, feel free. God designed it so that when you love and serve him, and when you love and serve other people, that's when your needs get met. I know you have needs that need to be met. And as family, my prayer is that they do get met. But the way they get met is when we love God together and we serve God together. That causes lasting transformation. So let me go to the Exodus story illustrated. One more verse. Galatians 2:20 says, I have been crucified with Christ, and it is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. This is the picture of the church, a people called to die to themselves so that Christ can live in them. Do you realize this is the beauty? God does not say die to yourself. That would be terrible if it was just die to yourself. No. The reason you die to yourself is so that Christ can live in you. We say, enough of me. I'm dying to myself so that I can be conformed more and more to the image of God's Son, Christ in us. That's how we're transformed. It's not about us. It's about Jesus becoming like him and caring about the things that he cares about. Beautiful relationship with God and with people. That's what he cares about. Now, I'm going to let you in a little bit on my quiet times because I'm going to be closing very soon with this. There's a prayer by a saint who lived 1,000 years ago named St. Francis of Assisi. Now, this guy wrote a prayer that you can find if you Google Francis prayer, first hit, this is it. I pray this prayer all the time. I would encourage you to do the same. Here's what it says. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, let me sow pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, may I sow light. And where there is sadness, may I sow joy. Where there's anger, peace. And where there is anxiety, rest. O divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in the giving that we receive, it is in the pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in the dying that we are born to eternal life. This prayer, it's not American consumerism at all. I mean, this prayer helps us to understand our purpose. If we want lasting transformation, it's becoming conformed to the image of Christ, dying to self so that Jesus can live in us. I want to challenge you this week. Two things. One, I would challenge you to meditate on Galatians 2:20. Read it every day. Maybe memorize it. Make it as part of your prayer this week. I am crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And I encourage you to search for this prayer. Google it. Copy it. Put it somewhere where you can pray it often. You know, as we close, I was thinking, God, I know what you've done in me, Dan, for this message. But what do you want? How do you want your church to respond? So as I was praying, and some thoughts came to my mind. One, you know, maybe you need to commit to your church family. Maybe you've been looking for other churches. And I'm not saying, listen to me, please. If you don't hear anything, this one's a good one. I'm not saying that it's not okay to leave a church. Sometimes it is. There's many good reasons, actually. But I just think preferences are not one of the good ones. That's not a good reason to leave a church. Could you imagine saying to your family, I'm out of here because I don't like the way mom cooks or mom washes the dishes or the way that mom makes me make my bed? I mean, those are preferences, and that just seems silly to me. So maybe you just been discontent because you keep focusing on you, and maybe that's how you need to repent and say, God, I need it to stop being about me. Maybe it's time to realize that the only way you're going to get the most out of your church family, if that, you know, is to jump in and begin meeting the needs of others. And maybe there's a place that you're like, I need to start being a part of this family. I need to be a contributor, not a consumer. If that's the case, you know, you have this connection card. Would you put that? I just want to contribute. If you do that, I promise you, Craig will know what that means. And somebody will, you know, email you or call you this week. Maybe, though, you need to cross the line. Because maybe you've been living life by yourself, and it's time to say, I need to follow Jesus. I need to live my life for him. Maybe you've never died to yourself and said, it is no longer about me. I'm no longer my own God. I'm making him my God. He wants to transform your heart permanently. He does. And maybe it's time to take that step. I don't know where you are. And the hardest part about coming into a church like this is I don't know you very well. Craig and I have a pretty good relationship. But even we hadn't talked in a while. So I don't know where you are. But you do. And God does. So I would encourage you to make the decision you need to make today. Would you pray with me? God, I want to thank you. This message impacted me several times this week, and I realized some places where I just keep being me-centered, and I'm sorry. And I know as American Christians, most of us struggle with that. And we are unsatisfied. Our transformation doesn't seem to last. So God, help us. Help us to get beyond ourselves. Help us to see these words on the wall, that what is most important is loving God and loving each other and blessing the world. Lord, for those of us in here who need to make a commitment to our church, I pray that you give us the courage to do that. But there might even be people in here who they need to take a step where they deny themselves and they just choose to follow you today, where they choose you to be the Lord of their life. God, I pray that you give them the courage to do that. And if that's you in here today talking to New Crossings Church, I mean, saying a simple prayer is not how you come to follow Jesus, but it is definitely a way to recognize what you're doing. And so to say to Jesus, Lord, I need you. I make a bad God with a little g. I need to follow you. I need to make you my God. If you do that, He'll give you permanent transformation.